Can I have your attention, please? Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
My name is Son Richard Abel, Adonai Ogun talking to, and I'd like to serve as a priest down very soon. It's now time to find the seats for Shabbat services.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Tamaya Hawkins, and I want to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's now a privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael Abel, now entering the sanctuary. It's now time to present to you our first speaker, Stefania Heiler.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You can be seated. The title of my speech is Satan versus Yahweh. Who are you like, Satan or Yahweh? We need to be like Yahweh. Please turn to Hebrews 1, verse 2 through 4, found on page 943. It says, He has in these last days spoken to us through his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, for whom he has made the world, for being the reflection of perfection of Yahweh, the representation of Yahweh's plan, upholding all things concerning that which was spoken by Yahweh through the law and prophets. When he had purged sin, sat down at the right hand of Yahweh on high, becoming so much better than the Malachim, he has inherited a more excellent name than they. Yes, we will be like Yahweh, just like Yeshua. We will be much better than the Malachim, much better than the world, and much, much, much better than Satan and her gods. In the fifth book of Yisrael, chapter 12, verse 44 through 45, it says, verse 4, becoming so much better than the Malachim, which you are also doing at this time by practicing the laws of Yahweh. That's how you become better than they. You have a subconscious mind, but he's going to give it to you very soon, that you never forgot anything that you put in it. Not one thing. You will be able to draw upon it at any moment, just like you do with your conscious mind now, only better. Verse 5. For example, to which of the Malachim did he ever say, "You are my son"? To none of them. But he's saying to you, if you qualify, and all you have to do is follow these laws and do what you're being taught in the house of Yahweh. That's what qualifies you. If you look over to Hebrews 3, verse 18, found on page 444, it says, "And to whom he did vow that he would not enter into his rest, but those who did not obey." So we see that we cannot enter into his rest because of unbelief. Pastor spoke of this in the 8th book of Yisrael, part 1, verse 146 through 148. It says, verse 18, "And to whom didn't he vow that he would enter into his rest? But to those who did not believe, only to those who did not obey, then they did not have right to the tree of life." Notice verse 19. So we see that they could not enter into his rest because of unbelief. The Christianity say, just believe. If you don't believe, Yah says to you, you don't keep the Sabbath. You don't enter his rest. And this is where the Christianities lie right now. They don't believe, so they don't keep the Sabbath. Yahweh said it was to those people, the ones who did not obey. Notice the last part of verse 18. It was to them those would not enter his rest, to those who did not obey. And notice, he said, verse 19, again, we see that we could not enter into his rest because of unbelief. That they did not believe, so they did not obey. It's as simple as that. Yeah, I bless your understanding. I'd like to turn it over to Sonia Schreiber for prayer.
It's my privilege and honor to present to you the great Gahan Yeshua Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh. Please be seated. All right, please be opening your books of Yahweh to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 through 25. And just to give an idea what this sermon is about, it's I cannot convince someone to respect themselves and others if physically I don't respect myself. All right, so it starts with how we take care of ourselves, how we work, and in the end result, of how respectful we are to one another. All right, and I just want to start off with this one right here, just to give you an idea. A lot of times we're seeing this. A lot of times we're living our lives like there's 3.5 years left. There's 3.5 years left. There's 3.5 years left. And we seem to let that take over our way of thinking and not actually think. We have a huge, long road ahead of us, and we have to be ready to do a job. If you do not make time for your wellness, you will be forced to make time for your illness. This hurts the body, as we are one body. And when we're not doing the things that we need to do, eating the proper foods, practicing things that bring forth righteous fruits, then we slow down ourselves. Not only do we slow down ourselves, but we slow down the ability to help the body function. And we're actually hindering the body at the same time. One of the best ways we can help the body function is here in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. And let us consider one another, how we may urge one another on towards love and righteous works. Consider. Actually consider. Right? To consider. That means you stop and you're actually doing things, actually considering the needs of others ahead of the needs of your own. The exact example that Yahshua Messiah gave us. And in verse 25, not forsaking the gathering of ourselves together. Yes, when we come here for these Sabbaths, for the feast, all these things, we are giving an example to those around us. We're taking on that character. We're preparing ourselves and we're helping prepare this body to do the job for those that are coming. That's what we're supposed to be working on right now. We're supposed to be preparing ourselves, not just to get ourselves to perfection, but to when we are ready, we're ready to serve those who are coming. We've got billions of people that we have to prepare for. It's not about me enjoying my life or living life ever how I need to live it for the next 3.5 years. It is about living my life according to what Yahweh's house has taught me and what Yahweh's house has guided me to do in order to be the most successful part of the body that I can be that Yahweh appointed me to be. Consider yourself so you can consider others. What is clean and acceptable? All right. What is clean and acceptable? A lot of times we take those things together. Clean and acceptable. So it's clean and acceptable. Now, is it clean? But is it also acceptable? And we're going to break that down so we can understand it. Self-respect. Self-respect. You cannot respect others if you don't respect yourself, right? It starts with respecting ourselves, right? If I want to treat others the way I want to be treated, but I treat myself like garbage, I put garbage in, I get garbage out in my attitude. If that's the way I treat myself, that's the way I'm going to treat other people. So when other people step on my toes, guess what's going to come out? Negativity, garbage, all right? That's what's coming out. One of the best ways you can show self-respect, eating well is a form of self-respect. Eating well, eating clean, eating what is acceptable. These things promote righteousness. Not only do they promote righteousness, what two things cause confusion? They go hand in hand. Sexual sins and unclean foods. These two things cause confusion and break down the body to where it can no longer function at its proper level, to where we can actually utilize it to everything we need. Matthew chapter 22, verse 35. Let's see what Yahshua had to say about this. Yahshua chapter 22, Well, look here in verse 34. It says, but when the Pharisees heard, this is on page 750, but when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they came together. All right, he had silenced the Sadducees through his teachings. They were astonished. They didn't know what to do. They've never heard someone teach with such authority. How did Yeshua teach with authority? He taught from the laws and the prophets. Everything he ever taught, every quote he ever gave, every teaching he brought forth was written in the laws and the prophets. They were astonished at his authority because why? Yeshua told them why. Because you haven't read. You haven't read what the prophets wrote. You haven't read what Moshe gave through the law. You're going off the doctrines of men. Right here in verse 35, let me show you. I showed you this last time, but let me show you. Every time Pastor brings something out, I always make sure. All right, so on 9/29/2012, in verse 35, Pastor broke down what a lawyer was and what they were doing to test him. All right? So in one of them, a lawyer, which Pastor said was a Mason, all right, an expert of the law, asked him a question to test him. So the word testing him means to trying to trap him. So they were trying to trap him. They were trying to get him to say something that they could trap him in his own teachings. But Yeshua never felt for that because he only taught what he was taught. He taught exactly according to what was written according to the prophets. He never went outside of that. And if we can do the same thing, if we only teach what we've been taught by Yahweh's house, we'll be successful in everything we do. But when we start adding in our own opinions and we start adding in our own ideas, that's when we start to fail. That's when we start to shut ourselves off to where we're no longer functioning as part of the body. But in verse 36, he says, teacher, what is the greatest commandment of the law? And Yeshua said to him, you must love Yahweh your Father with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your brother as yourself. I never want to see a brother. I never want to see someone in Yahweh's house suffering because of the choices they make. So why should I be making choices that cause me to suffer? Why should I be making choices by the foods that I'm eating or the actions that I'm committing that causes me to suffer? If I want to teach someone else on how to practice self-control, the only way I'm going to convince someone else to learn self-control is if I myself am the example of self-control. If I learn to control my emotions, not by food, not by alcohol, not with other things, but actually learning how to deal with those emotions. And I promise you, once you learn how to deal with actually facing the issues and not trying to eat them away or not trying to drink them away or smoke them away or whatever it is that pulls your mind or entertainment or anything else that pulls your mind off those things, you're actually clear-headed enough to actually deal with those things. And you're actually clear-headed enough to be able to start to teach other people how to do these things. And it really does help with what you're feeding into your body. You get the confusion out. Cleansing. Remember this. Pastor said cleansing is not a suggestion. It's a what? It's a law. All right. These things are very necessary for us to get to the point we want to. All right. Pastor said we're all born with STDs now. We have these things inside of our bodies. They're laying dormant inside of our bodies. All it takes is unclean food or a sexual sin or something that brings forth these things, and boom, now they're rampant. Now they're taking over. Now our bodies are starting to break down on us. All right, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12. All right, and this is on page 890. All things are permissible for me, but not all things are advantageous. All right, that word advantageous, right? It means taking advantage of. You know, is it available? Yes. Does it mean I need to utilize it more than I actually need to? No, not necessarily. All lawful things are permissible for me, but I will not be overpowered by them. All right, so you think about that. You know, that's why we were given the example of the man that asked his sons to stop drinking alcohol for a specific reason. And they obeyed. They listened. They said, our father told us we're not supposed to be drinking alcohol. The same thing we've been asked to do in these last days. We're not going to partake of that wine until Yahshua's kingdom, when we partake of it with him together. But we've been asked these things in order to show that these things are not overpowering us, right? But we can do the same thing with foods. We can do the same thing with different things, right? I named a diet, all right? A diet, all right? Diets don't work, all right? How many people have ever tried a diet? They don't work, okay? It's your lifestyle. All right? You can't go on a quick diet and expect to fix yourself for the rest of your life. It's about changing your lifestyle completely. Every day, every second, the choices you make, it creates new habits. And once you create those new habits, you create a new lifestyle. And once you have that new lifestyle, your body starts to function for you properly. I call it the OSC diet. It's called the Oki self-control diet. Right? That's all it is. It's about learning to control your emotions. It's about learning to control yourself. So you learn how to control all those different things. The Oki self-control diet, it works. You know, we're taught it every day. We're taught it in every class. We learn these things. It's everything we've been taught. It's just putting it to use. Everything we've been taught in Yahweh's house, it's about putting it to use. We're going to go through verse 15 here. It says, food is for the stomach and stomach is for the food, but Yahweh will destroy both it and them. Now, the body is not for sexual impurity, but for Yahshua and Yahshua for the body. All right, so you're going to notice a lot of times it's always food and sexual impurities that go together because those are the two things that cause confusion. You're going to see how the prophets, the apostles, Yahshua, Messiah, all these people, that's our foundation, always put these two things together. And Pastor actually mentioned this the last time he spoke too. And Yahweh has raised both up Yahshua and will also raise up his own power. Do you not know that your bodies are the members of Messiah? So I'm not just, it's not about me taking care of myself. It's about me taking care of myself so I am a better functioning part of the body. All right? If I'm not functioning the way that Yahweh wants me to function, I'm not hindering myself. I'm hindering everything else that Yahweh is trying to accomplish inside Yahweh's house. In verse 15, do you not know that your bodies are the members of Messiah? Would I take the members of Messiah and make them members of a prostitute? By no means. All right? So you don't take your body and tie it into the world. All right? When you think of prostitute, all right, think of God worship. That's what it's talking of. It's speaking of God worship, taking on these things that cause confusion. All right? Being a partaker of the table of demons and the table of Yahweh, it can't be. We're part of one body. All right? Be turning over to Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23. It's on page 511. In verse 19. Hear, my son, be wise and guide your mind in the way. Do not be among those who drink too much wine, nor among the gluttons who eat all kinds of meat. Gluttons. How many people have ever noticed that before? What is a glutton? Most of it's somebody that overeats, somebody that eats too much, right? Feast time, I think we all eat too much. We all overeat during feast because we're feasting, we're rejoicing. That doesn't make us a glutton, all right? What makes us a glutton is eating things which are not acceptable to be eaten, eating all kinds of meats, eating things that are not acceptable, all right? Clean food versus unclean food. If I can't tell the difference, if I don't know how to use Yahweh's law, if I don't know what Yahweh's house has taught me, in a confused mind, both those things are acceptable. What does that cause? More confusion. More confusion to where now I can't tell the difference between right and wrong or anything. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and the rags will clothe those who are lulled into sleep. All right, so glutton, those who eat all kinds of meats, even if they're clean or if they're acceptable. All right, because I can eat as much clean food as I want to, and I can eat a lot of clean food. But all it takes is one bit of uncleanness, one bit of food that's defiled, and now the body's defiled. All right. When we confess these things, when we partake of unclean food, we eat something accidentally and we confess these things, yes, we confess. But remember, these things are still affecting our bodies. Now there's a cleansing process we have to go through. Dying, we will die if we allow these things to get into our bodies. Now we have to go through everything we've been taught by Yahweh's house in order to remove these things from our body, to start the process of healing. All right? It's about eating with purpose. Right? How many people have ever heard the saying, eat with purpose? What is eating with purpose? What is my purpose of eating? It's because I'm hungry, right? That's usually our purpose. I'm hungry, I want to eat. Right? But it's about what we eat. What we eat is either going to give us sustained energy, or it's going to give us a quick burst of energy, and then we're going to be falling asleep by noon. Right? So either we can eat something that's going to sustain us through the entire day, or we can have donuts for breakfast, and we're going to be miserable for the rest of the day and not be successful at what we're trying to do. All right, eating with purpose. Eating with purpose. All right, I don't care what this food is. What I'm talking about here is what we were told in Isaiah. Honey, butter, all right? Honey and butter, that's something that you can eat with purpose. What is the purpose for eating butter? Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 15. Isaiah chapter 7. Oops. This is on page 534. All right, buddy and honey will he eat so he may know to refuse evil and to choose righteousness. All right, so that's eating with purpose. All right, there's a purpose there. It helps you to abstain from evil. It helps you not only to abstain it, to refuse it. All right, that's a strong word. Not only am I not partaking in evil, but I'm refusing evil. All right, that's a character right there. That's talking about Yeshua. All right, he refused evil. He didn't want to be a part of it. And choose righteousness. Refuse it and choose it. Now, how does honey and butter work like this? All right, honey, when it breaks down inside the body, is sugar. Right, that's what it is. It's glucose. That's what it is. That's what it transfers into the body. All right, it becomes sugar. All right, what helps us with our emotions? Carbs. All right, things that help us deal with these comfort foods. But honey is also known as one of the strongest antioxidants there is to man. All right, antioxidants. All right, antioxidant means it inhibits oxidation. That's what it does. It stops oxidation inside the body. Oxidation is a chemical reaction that produces free radicals. Right, leading to a chain reaction that damages cells of organisms. Right, so when you have free radicals inside the body, it causes a chain reaction. Remember, Pastor talked about this. Right, he talked about these things coming into our body and these cells raping other cells, and they start destroying and they start taking over the body to where now the cells that are inside of our body can't function anymore. Right, that's what he's talking about. Right, honey actually protects you from this. Right, so it actually protects you from these free radicals, from damaging the cells inside of an organism. We are a living organism. Our gut health and everything inside of our body, these things, they should be bringing forth righteousness. Right, everything, every sickness, guess where it starts? It starts in the gut. Right, when we're sick and we're sick constantly and over and we're constantly feeling nauseous or we're constantly headaches or everything else, it starts in the gut. You heal the gut, you can heal the whole body. Butter. Now, he said honey and butter, so there's two things that have to go together there. Now, one thing the world has taught us against, as long as I've been alive, is fats. Butters. Well, you need to be on margarine. You need to be taking these things. You need to stay away from butters. You need to get on better than what Yahweh created, right? And that's what we see. How great is the health in the world today? It's horrendous. You look at the world today, there's no health. All right, butter. It actually regulates hormone and thyroid function. So with the stopping of eating the healthy fats that Yahweh created for us, what did we see, especially inside the United States? Skyrocketing of obesity. All right? Obesity is usually, all right, you're either in a calorie deficit, all right? If you're in a calorie deficit, you're going to lose weight. Unless you're hormonally imbalanced or your thyroid is not functioning properly. What helps promote these to work for us? Butter. Butter fats, the healthy fats that Yahweh created for us. These things that Yahweh gave us, the animal fats. Remember, Pastor talked about beef fat, all right? How these things, what is it? It lubricates the brain. It lubricates our joints. All these different things, it promotes health within our body. All right? How many people know that fat is actually an energy source? All right? The first thing your body looks for is sugar, right? If your body has an abundance of sugar, that's what it's going to look for. And if your body's constantly fed full of sugar and it's not limited to how much you eat, it just burns the sugar and it never gets to burning the fat. So it stores the fat and never actually burns all the sugar. So if I eat a cake for breakfast and I eat a cake for lunch and I eat this and that and never actually eat something that doesn't over-limit my sugar, all right, well, then my body's never going to get the burning fat. All right? I told these guys I was going to show this. All right? This is a typical breakfast for some of our young men inside the house of Yahweh. How much sugar do you think is right there? Well, actually, fructose. There's no sugar inside there. It's fructose, right? But you start to see this, right? Well, these young men are arguing, well, I'm nice and skinny. I don't have to worry about it. Eventually, we all get older, and eventually our bodies stop working, and our metabolism slows down, and that starts to add up, all right? And when it starts to add up, the point I'm trying to make is sugar is not unlawful. Sugar is very healthy. Sugar is something our bodies need. But there's actually a limit to how much our bodies need. Because if I overload it and overload it and overload it, my body's never able to recover from it to start working on the stuff that I had in there before. But if I limit the amount I have, put in how much I need, all right? A typical male's body needs to, you can function on an extra 9 teaspoons of sugar. Women are typically 6 teaspoons, all right? That's less than a can of Coke, all right? That's how much your body can actually use, all right? Our bodies naturally carry about a teaspoon of sugar a day in it, all right? But when we start overloading, all right, is sugar healthy? Yes, cane sugar is healthy. doesn't mean the more cane sugar I eat, the healthier I become, right? That's not how it works, all right? We need these things inside of our body. We need these things to help promote righteousness. These things are lawful and right, but it's not advantageous. I actually have to limit myself. Parents, all right? As parents, all right? That's a managing position. You're a manager. You're a manager of your household. You're a manager of your children. Why all of a sudden do we start to see? Pastors talked about it. Children turn 13, and all of a sudden they know more than their father. They know more than everything else. They, you know, right, their emotions start taking over. What start changes around that time? Is it just the child? No, it's typically as parents, we stop managing what the children are eating. We allow them to start deciding for themselves what they can and can't eat. What do they start eating? Well, I just showed you what they start eating. So their bodies aren't functioning the way they need to function, right? We actually need to teach them health. Butter is one of these things. Butter also combats fungal infections. It boosts your immunity. It's great for your teeth and your bones. It gives you energy. It gives you energy if you're fat adapted, which means your body looks for fat as a source. If you're fat adapted, that means you're using the sugars inside your body, and once you burn through the sugars, now your body is burning through fat. So it's using fat for energy, and fat is an actual natural energy source for our bodies. It prevents oxidative stress. That's an imbalance of free radicals and antioxidants. So it works with honey. So both these things are antioxidants. They fight against these damaging free radicals that come into our bodies from the foolish things we put inside of our bodies constantly. It prevents cancer. What? Butter prevents cancer. Well, who told us that? Yes. It wasn't the doctors in the world, I'll tell you that right now. It promotes nutrition absorption. Eating honey and butter, when you eat the other nutrients throughout the day, your vitamins and your minerals and stuff, it actually helps your body to absorb those things. So it actually works for you. Vitamin and mineral rich, and also prevents heart disease. What was the very thing that our wise doctors of the world told us we needed to stay away from? Butter. It's causing heart attacks. No. Butter made the way Yahweh said to make it. Everything made according to the way Yahweh said to make it brings forth perfect health. Our jobs are to return everything back to the original way that Yahweh created it. All right? The way that Yahweh intended it to be. All right? This was a quote from Hippocrates, all right? Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. If you're eating proper food, which is what pastors have been trying to get us to do as long as I've been in the house of Yahweh, eating proper food, your body can heal itself. Your body can start to work for you. Your body doesn't need the medicines that the world is selling you. If you're eating clean and, right, and acceptable, all right? So in the parenting manual on page 28, we've covered this before, but I always like to remind people, this is one of the best books I think the House of Yahweh has ever published, especially for parents. If you don't use it, you should be focusing more on using this book. This should be our parenting. All right, this parenting manual, we need some great classes given on this. On page 28, food, all right, talking about your role as a provider, talking about your role as a manager. You're managing your children, right? Managing, being a leader isn't about making people do things. It's about taking care of those who are under you to make sure they're capable of doing the things they're supposed to do. That's what a leader is. I'm managing this situation so I can make sure you're capable of doing everything you need to do. So if I'm managing my children, making sure that they become righteous children in the house of Yahweh, that actually takes consistency and that takes dedication of my own time to make sure I'm actually participating. I'm giving them the things they need. Right? Not making sure they're trying to figure it out on their own. Because if you let a child figure out their diet on their own, they're not going to figure out how to do it right. All right, food must supply the necessary nutrients. That would include proteins, fats, vegetables and fruits. Those aren't nutrients, but those are food groups, all right? Carbohydrates and sugars. Sugars is a carbohydrate, all right? So your nutrients are right here, all right? This is your macronutrients, your protein, your carbs, and your fats. Anything you eat either has all these or has a bunch of sugar, all right, which is carbs, all right? There has to be a balance, all right? So you see, I know there's a lot of young guys that want to become nice and strong and build strong muscles and everything else, so they're working out and they're going out and playing sports and they're doing all this other stuff because they want to be physically fit, and then they come back and they stuff themselves full of cakes and everything else. That's not how it works. All right? It's life. It's changing your life. All right? Right here. Young men, old men, whoever who wants to be fit. Fitness is 20% exercise and 80% nutrition. You cannot outrun your fork. Right? If our desire is to be healthy, and the only reason we should be healthy is not to have big muscles and everything else and be athletic and be a sports god. If we're choosing to be healthy, we're making that choice because we want to better benefit the body of Messiah. We're here to be beneficial to Yahweh's work. One of the biggest things we're missing is movement. All right? I can eat great. I can start eating right. But if, all right, I can reduce my food. Now, here's the problem. Most people think diet, I need to cut back on my food. Instead of, I need to up my activity level. If I cut back on my food, what am I cutting back on? My proteins, my fats, and my carbs. Those very things that I need. So cutting out food does not make you more healthy. Becoming more active and actually getting to a calorie deficit while you're still promoting moderate protein, not a lot of protein, moderate protein, which pastors told us how much meat we need. You know, 4 ounces, that's how much you need. You see the meals we get from the cafeteria? Right? We don't need cheeseburgers this size in order to get our proteins. Right? We just need that little bit. Because guess what? If your body doesn't use the protein, what does it become? It gets stored as fat. The same thing as sugars, right? The same thing as carbs, all these other things. It gets stored into our bodies and not used. Very few of us are actually active enough to be able to go through that much protein, right? Fats, carbs, and proteins. You have to have fats too. If you eliminate fats from your diet, your body stops working for you. You have to have these things. Your joints start to hurt and all these different things. These things are needed for our bodies and help us to become successful. In Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 16. Proverbs 25 and verse 16. So what I was getting to just a few seconds ago was one of the main things we need, and I actually heard an announcement about it, and I know it was for the women of ages 50 and over, but about walking. I don't know what it was about, but walking is one of the main things we can do. A body in motion stays in motion, okay? So when your body starts moving, your body keeps moving. It keeps working. But when you start to sit down and you stop, right, anybody that's ever done a physical day's worth of work or if you've done something really strenuous, you feel great. But as soon as you sit down and you go to get back up, your body hurts. It's hard to get moving. Right? But the more you do this, the more your body becomes adapted to it. So a body in motion, a body that goes walking and moves, it's very, you know, it's something that your body can handle. And it's not overstressed, and almost every one of us can walk. But if you can walk daily, this really helps promote everything that your body needs in order. All right, we weren't created to fly around in machines and drive cars and everything from point A to point B. All right, movement. All right. Because if we're not reducing the amount of food we need to eat in order to maintain our health, then we have to increase our activity level. That way our bodies keep functioning for us, right? And remember, that's what it's about. It is about creating my body as a successful part of this body, to where we're working as one body. We're both partakers of the blood and the bread, all right? That bread, the body of Messiah, these are the things we're partaking of. We're in Proverbs, it was chapter 25, Proverbs 25 and verse 16. This is found on page 512. Have you found honey? Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need because too much will make you vomit. All right. So yes, honey and butter is very, very healthy. All right. I've never eaten so much honey that it vomits out, but you know, like this other food, all right, not just talking about honey. If I eat in excess of anything, my body is not going to function properly. All right, I have to set limits. That's why I called it the Oki self-control diet. I have to set my mind in advance. This is what I'm eating. This is what I need for me to be able to eat with purpose to reach the goal that I need for the rest of the day so that I can function properly doing the work of Yahweh, and that's what I'm going to eat. And I've already got it precalculated because my mind is telling me this is what I need. I've already set in advance. This is what I'm eating. And if I go anything out of that, I know it's going to take away my ability to be successful at what I'm trying to accomplish. All right, so talking about sugar, all right, sugar. So we see a lot of things made with real sugar, made with real sugar, all right. What did Pastor say was healthy for us? Cane sugar. cane sugar, all right? So when you see something that says made with real sugar and you look in the ingredients, it's usually going to say cane sugar, all right? But a lot of these things we're seeing that says real sugar is not cane sugar, all right? It's sugar beets. It's real sugar, but it's coming from genetically modified sugar beets, which does not function the same thing inside your body as real cane sugar, all right? So you have to be careful. You have to be careful when you're buying these things and you're examining these things because you want to make sure you're not using things that the world thought they made better than Yahweh. Cane sugar was created the way Yahweh intended it. It's very healthy if not used in excess, all right? You use in excess, it gets stored as fat. Then your body starts hurting, all right? Leviticus 11 and verse 2. Sorry about that. Leviticus 11 and verse 2. So now we're going to get into the laws of Yahweh concerning these things. So we were talking about clean and acceptable. All right? We always hear clean and acceptable. So it's clean and acceptable. Or is it clean and? It has to be clean and acceptable. There's actually two different things there. It's clean, but just because it's clean, or just because an animal is clean, does that always mean that animal is acceptable? No, it does not. All right? We have to think law. Think law when you think of these things. All right, Leviticus chapter 11 and verse 2, speak to the children of Israel, saying, these are the animals you may eat among the beasts upon the land. All right, so there's the law right there. These you may eat upon the beast of the land. All right, so let's just break this down right here, and let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 14 and verse 11. So the clean and unclean laws is found in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14, and let's look at verse 2. For you are a holy people, this is on page 159, for you are a holy people to Yahweh your Father. So what's the difference between us and the rest of the world? We're a holy people. Therefore, we have stricter guidelines on what we put inside of our body. Yahweh has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure over all the peoples here on the face of the earth. You must not eat any abominable thing. Any abominable thing. All right, this is a cow. All right, now we can get into the law. It has a split hoof and it chews the cud. This is a clean animal, correct? According to the laws of Yahweh, this animal is clean. Does that mean that that animal is always acceptable for me to eat? No. All right, this might be a surprise to you, but this is some ways that it becomes abominable. These things are not acceptable for us to eat. Right. Here in verse 11, all clean birds you may eat. Right? This is chicken. Clean, right? Always acceptable? No. These things are not acceptable for us to be eating. These things do not promote health inside of our body. All right? Why? Why? Yeah. I read the ingredients. I read everything about it. I know it's all clean. All right? We're turning over to Chagia. Chagia chapter 2, page 716. In verse 11, he says, this is what Yahweh of hosts says. Ask the priests now concerning the law and say to them, if one carries holy meat in the fold of his garment and with the fold of his garment touches bread, stew, wine, or oil, or any other meat, will they become holy? So if I've got clean food and I touch something else that's food, will that become holy? And the priest answered and said, no, holiness is not infectious. Then Chagia asked, but if one who is ceremonially unclean by a dead body touches any of these, will they be unclean? All right, so ceremonially unclean by a dead body. We get sprinkled by the ashes of the red heifer at least twice a year at the Feast of Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles. We get sprinkled with the ashes of the red heifer. The rest of the world is defiled by what? Death. They're ceremonially unclean. So these people that are making your food, your chickens and your cows and everything else, but if one who is ceremonially unclean by a dead body touches any of these, will they be clean? Will they be unclean? And the priest answered and said, what he touches will be unclean. Unholiness. Unholiness is infectious. Then Chagia answered and said, so it is with the people as so is with this nation. Before me, says Yahweh, every work of their hands and what they offer there is unclean. These things are not acceptable because Yahweh told us we are a special treasure. We are a holy nation. When Yahweh tells us to come out from among them and be separate, he's telling us to come out from among them and not be, when he talked about food and then he talked about being joined to a prostitute, right? You become one. So when you partake of the ways of this world, you become one with the world. You cannot be a partaker and be in unity with the world and still be part of the body of Messiah. You have to come out completely from among it and be separate. And hopefully this will encourage us and help us think a little bit more before we put something into our mouths to defile ourselves. Guard ourselves, because you are a holy special treasure to Yahweh. But it's about us practicing self-control to where we can guard ourselves, to where we can be beneficial to those that are around us and for those that are coming after us. All right, if you'll please stand. I have the pleasure to turn it over to the great Kahan Levi Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. This morning, I'd like to continue on a subject that I've spoken on previously, and it's concerning treasures of the heart, part three. And the subheading, I've been having some trouble to decide what the subheading of the sermon is going to be. I've come up with different titles so far, and I think what I'm going to settle on is the heart of the witness. Okay, the heart of the witness. And it's not quite what you think, and it is what you think. Okay, so that will probably set the stage. Okay, so the last time I spoke, we were talking about the heart being tested, and we looked at how Yahweh examines, tests, tries the heart, and so forth. So just for a quick review, let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 31. Chapter 31, because we saw that Yahweh writes or puts his laws in our inward parts, and he writes it within our hearts, or in our hearts. And reading Jeremiah chapter 31, and this is just doing a very quick review just to get a little bit of what we covered before we go into what we are going to be covering today. It says, "Behold, the days are coming," Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31, "Behold, the days are coming, says Yahweh, when I will renew my covenant with the house of Israel," or the house of Israel, "and with the house of Yad." And of course, we covered the last time I spoke that the covenant simply means agreement. It's an agreement that Yahweh has made with mankind. That agreement has been written down, and of course, it has come down to us in the form of the book of Yahweh, and it's been explained to us by the one whom Yahweh has sent. "This covenant which I made with their forefathers when I took them by hand out of Egypt will not be replaced." So there's no replacing of this agreement that Yahweh has made. It's not as what Christianity says, there's an old covenant and a new covenant. No, it's the same covenant, it's the same agreement. "Which covenant they broke, although I was a father to them, says Yahweh. For this covenant is the same covenant that I will renew with the house of Israel after those days, says Yahweh. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, minds, and I'll be their father, and they will be my people." And the last time I spoke, we look at that word "write," all the various definitions that goes along with it. Let's look at Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 9 and 10, because we looked at that the last time also. And I'm not going to go through all the definitions that we did the last time, but just to rehearse a little bit, it says, verse 9, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" And yes, we looked at that word "deceitful," and it talks about the fraud, the crookedness, all the type of evil things that anyone can hide within their heart. And verse 10, it says, "I, Yahweh, search the heart." You know, and this is something that Yahweh says he will do, that he will examine, he will test, he will try. He says, "I, Yahweh, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings." You know, and Yahweh is the one that is searching our hearts, and he's looking for something. You know, he's looking for something very specifically when he searches our hearts, because he wants to know what is written in there. Because the things that is written within our hearts, what we put in, it's what actually influences our behavior. And if you remember the very beginning of this series, I covered a scripture that talks about out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. That's in Matthew 12:35. So it's what we put in, the treasure, the things that we value, those are the things that comes out of our mouth. And sometimes the way it comes out could either be beneficial or it can be an embarrassment to us. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 6. So today we are looking at what I'm going to be really focusing on is exactly what are we putting in, or what should we be putting in to our hearts. And of course we know that, yes, it's the laws of Yahweh. That's what Yahweh is looking for. But there's some details that you see in the scriptures, and that's really what I want to cover. So in Deuteronomy chapter 6, reading from verse 1, it says, "Now these are the laws, the statutes and the judgments, which Yahweh your Father has commanded me to teach you." Well, who is the me being spoken of in this verse? Moshe, right? That me was Moshe. Moshe is the one who is doing the talking. So he says, "These are the laws, the statutes, and the judgments which Yahweh your Father has commanded me, Moshe, to teach you so that you can observe them in the land you're crossing over to possess, so that you can reverence Yahweh your Father by keeping all his statutes and his laws, which I," again, Moshe, "command you, your son, and your son's son all the days of your life, so that your days can be prolonged. Hear therefore, Israel, and be careful to obey, so it can be well with you, and so that you can greatly multiply, as Yahweh, the mighty Father your fathers, has promised you in the land that flows with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our Father, Yahweh is one. And you must love Yahweh your Father with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these laws which I command you this day must be in your heart." And again, the I that is doing the one who is doing the speaking, of course, this is referring to Yahweh here, but remember, it's Moshe is the one who is doing the speaking, and he's saying, well, the laws that I am teaching you, this is what has to be in your heart. This is what you must put in your heart, the teachings that is coming forth from me being Moshe. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 18, found in page 156. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 18, and it says, "Store up these laws of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign upon your hand, that they can be as frontlets between your eyes." So you see again, we are being told to store up these words, put them within our hearts and minds. And of course, it's the words that were spoken of by Moshe at that particular time. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 32, and let's read from verse 45. This is found on page 175 in the book of Yahweh. And reading from verse 45, "And when Moshe finished speaking all the words to all Israel, he said to them, 'Take to heart all the words I've testified among you this day.'" Now, the word store, take, put, it all comes from the same Hebrew word here. It's just the same word being utilized, but just in different context. And all of it is showing that we have to take this to our hearts. These are things that we have to store, we have to put. It must be in there. "So take to heart all the words I have testified among you this day, so that you can command your children to carefully observe and do all the words of this law. These are not just idle words for you. These laws mean life to you, and by them you shall prolong your days in the land which you are crossing over the Jordan to possess." So the emphasis being is on Moshe. You know, Moshe is saying, you got to take the words that I'm speaking to you. These are the words that you got to store up in your heart. These are the laws that you must put in your heart. And Moshe is doing the speaking. And that was in that time period. Of course, in this time period, we do have one who speaks to us. His words, his testimony must be taken with the same seriousness as Moshe's words and as Moshe's testimony. And it must be placed in the same place within our hearts. Let's look at Exodus chapter 24. So the laws that Moshe taught them, the children of Israel at that time, it was all written down, and it was written in a book. So reading Exodus chapter 24, let's look at verses 3 through 4, 7 and 12. "So Moshe came and told the people all the words of Yahweh and the judgment of Yahweh. And all the people answered with one voice and said, 'All these words which Yahweh has spoken, we will do.' And Moshe wrote all the laws of Yahweh. rose up early in the morning, built an altar at the foot of the mountain, set up 12 pillars representing the 12 tribes of Israel. Let's look at verse 7. So you see that Moshe wrote, he wrote down the words, and in verse 7 we'll see, then he took the book of the covenant. So this was put in the book. All the words that he wrote down was placed in the book. Book of the covenant. Remember that word covenant means agreement. You know, this is the agreement that Yahweh is making with mankind. So then he took the book of the covenant and read it to the people and said, all that Yahweh has said we will do and be obedient. All that Yahweh has said we will do and be obedient. So you can see that this was written in a book. Verse 12. Then Yahweh said to Moshe, come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments I have written that you can teach them. If you look at the side note, both side notes, G1 and also R1. So by tablets of stone, you see the side note, G1, it says, signifying the hardness of man's heart, unless, note that word, unless Yahweh does write his laws in man's heart by the guidance of Spirit Holy. And then it gives you some scriptural references. And if you look at R1, where it says law, it says all the 613 laws of Yahweh are implicitly contained in the Ten Commandments and can therefore be regarded as having been written in on the tablets. So you could see that, again, it's referring to the laws that are written. It's also referring to the laws that must be put in our hearts, as we covered in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and in Deuteronomy chapter 11. It shows that it must be stored. And in Deuteronomy chapter 32, it shows that these are not idle words to us by any means. Now let's look at Exodus chapter 25. Because all of this is, it's in all of these words that are given to us, that was given to us by Moshe and now given to us by the one sent, it has to be stored up in our hearts. Now in Exodus chapter 25, it says, and let them make me a sanctuary that I can dwell among them. Let them make me a sanctuary that I can dwell among them. And of course, you could go through all of Exodus chapter 25 and then you could get into the following chapters, and it begins to describe the sanctuary that must be made. We should know that the sanctuary is referring to us, the people, the house of Yahweh. So let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Keep your place in Exodus chapter 25. We'll be coming back to it. So let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and let's read verses 16 through 17. So 1 Corinthians chapter 3 verse 16, it says, do you not understand that you are the house of Yahweh, speaking of us, and the Spirit of Yahweh dwells in you? If anyone defiles the house of Yahweh, Yahweh will destroy him, for the house of Yahweh is holy, which you are. And the previous speaker spoke about that, us being that holy people to Yahweh. And that's what the word sanctuary is when you look it up. It is a holy place. You know, the sanctuary is a holy place. And of course, what makes the sanctuary holy, it's not the building itself. Otherwise, if you remember that short film that we saw last week, you'd be in a Catholic church just rubbing us, you know, the foot of a statue if you think that's what holiness is all about. What makes the place holy is the people. It's the people in that place that makes the place holy. You know, and keep that in mind because it's very important. It's not just the building itself, but it's the people in the building that actually makes it holy. So again, so we're looking at that we are the house of Yahweh and the Spirit of Yahweh dwells in you. Let's look at Revelation chapter 11 verse 19. Revelation chapter 11 verse 19, and we'll, after that we'll go back to Exodus chapter 25. And it says, then the house of Yahweh was made open for all to see in heaven. And if you look at the side note there, the side note I, it says, you are that house of Yahweh. You are that house of Yahweh. And then it says, and the ark of Yahweh's covenant was seen in his house. And then Pastor says, the covenant of Yahweh, which will bring us to that possession. And then he made reference to Revelation 20, verses 4 through 6. Continue reading verse 19. And there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 25 again and continue reading from verse 8. So we are the house of Yahweh, and the house of Yahweh is made open. And Pastor has brought that out recently. And everything that is within our heart is being made known to the heavens. You know, it's extending out from us. And you saw that we have that energy field that extends, you know, like Pastor described it as a river. It flows out, and it can, and it do influence not only our behavior, but the behavior of others around us. And Pastor made mention of this can influence someone to make the decision to come to the house of Yahweh, or it can influence someone to make the decision, well, I'm not ready to go to that place yet. And it's just contingent on what we are storing in our hearts, the things that we, you know, that we are harboring, and of course what is coming forth in our interactions with one another. So read in Exodus chapter 25, verse 8, it says, and let them make me a sanctuary, that I can dwell among them. And this is part of the promise that Yahweh has made, that he will be among his people. He will be a father to us. All of that is part of the covenant. And notice verse 9, according to all that I show you, after the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furnishings, exactly so shall you make it. And they shall make an ark of acacia wood, 2.5 cubits long, and a cubit and a half wide, and a cubit and a half high, three and three quarter feet long, and 2.25 feet wide and high. So when you think of everything that, you know, the sanctuary that Yahweh tells them to make, the first thing that he instructs them to make is this box here, right? That's the very first thing, and I want you to think about that, because he could have given them the lampstand first. He could have given them the altar, the four horns of the golden altar first, but he chose this, right? This is what we have sitting before us. So he said, make this ark of acacia wood, and he gives the dimension, overlaid with pure gold, both inside and out, and make a gold molding all around. And the gold, we know that the gold represents two things. It represents purity and unity. Okay, so the gold represents purity and unity. Cast four rings of gold for it and fasten them to the four corners. Two rings on one side, two rings on the other side. Then make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark, so the ark can be carried by them. The poles shall remain in the rings of the ark. They shall not be removed from it. And you shall place into the ark the testimony which I give you. Now, this is really important to note, because just as Moshe was commanded to place the testimony that he was given into the ark, it's the same command that the house of Yahweh, the same instructions the house of Yahweh has followed, and there is testimony that has been placed into this ark that is in front of us, that is brought out every Sabbath and every day of the feast. Continue in verse 17, and make a mercy seat, an atonement cover of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and 1.5 cubits shall be its width, and make 2 cherubim out of hammered gold at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. You shall make them. And the mercy seat itself, it's the covering that sits on top of the ark. So the ark itself is the box. The mercy seat is this cover that sits on top of it. Verse 20, and the cherubim shall stretch out their wings, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and they shall face one another, each facing down to the cover. You shall place the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark, again, you shall put the testimony that I give you. You know, and what I really want to draw here is it's a parallel between what's in the ark and what we should be putting into our hearts. You know, so that's really the parallel that I'm drawing, that just as there are certain things, there's a testimony that is put into the ark, there's a testimony that also has to go into our heart, and it's very specific. So it says, you shall place the mercy seat on top of the ark. You know, the mercy seat, that's the place where Yahweh sits. So that he sits on the mercy seat. Now, he's not sitting there right now, but it's a representation. You know, I don't want anyone to be scared thinking, well, Yahweh's right there looking at them. He did say that his eyes and heart will be here on the Sabbath and the feast days, but it is a representation of where he sits. And that I don't know if I'll get into that at this time, but a pastor has given a lot of sermons concerning the mercy seat and what it represents. You just have to go to the 8th book of Israel, part 1, and there's a series of sermons that deals with the mercy seat and why Yahweh brought forth this plan of salvation. So you shall place the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I will give you, and there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are on the ark of the testimony, about all things which I will give you in the law to the children of Israel. So again, this is something that was given to Moshe. Moshe gave this to the children of Israel. This was placed in the ark of the testimony. So we have the scripture reference where it's referred to as the ark of the testimony. And again, this is the reason why I was having a little bit of difficulty in selecting the title, because in one place it's called the ark of the testimony. Turn to Numbers chapter 10. Keep your place in Exodus chapter 25. We'll be coming back to it, because it is called different names. So we have the ark of the testimony. In Numbers chapter 10, it's referred to as the ark of the covenant, which is the same thing that is being spoken of. Numbers 10, reading from verse 33. So they set out from the mountain of Yahweh and traveled for 3 days. The ark of the covenant of Yahweh went in front of them during those 3 days to search out a resting place for them. And the cloud of Yahweh was above them by day when they went out from the camp. And it was, whenever the ark set out, Moshe said, "Rise up, O Yahweh, let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee in front of you." Whenever it came to rest, he said, "Return, O Yahweh, to the multitudes of the thousands of Israel." So you see in this verse, it's referred to as the Ark of the Covenant. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 3. And here we have another reference where it is called the Ark of Yahweh. 1 Samuel 3, verse 3. So it's the same thing being described, but here we have another name for it. This is found on page 225. It says, "The lamp of Yahweh had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the tabernacle of Yahweh where the ark of Yahweh was." Where the ark of Yahweh was. So you see, it's referred to as the ark of the testimony, ark of the covenant, ark of Yahweh. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 25, verse 22. "And there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are on the ark of the testimony, about all things which I will give you in the law to the children of Israel." Just for your notes, you could make reference to the book of Israel, number 5, chapter 29, where Pastor gives the details of the ark of the covenant, showing why we need to have one in these last days, and something that was going to be built, and it has been built because we do have it. Now in Exodus chapter 25, we have the word ark, and then we have the word testimony. And if you look at the word ark, it's number 727, and it means a box, ark, and chest. And it comes from word 717 in the sense of gathering. So you could see that there are things that have been gathered together to place within that box, within that ark, or within the chest. Now, the next definition is from Brown, Driver, and Briggs, and it's chest, ark, ark of the covenant. So this is what we have set in front of us. We have this box, this chest. And again, remember, I'm trying to draw an analogy or to show the parallels between the ark and our hearts, because our hearts is also something that stores treasure. It's also placed within our hearts, that is. It's also placed within where? It's within our chest, right? It also, you could see some of the parallels that I'm getting at. Now, this word testimony, it is 5715, and it means testimony, and it also has witness. And it's from word number 5749. It means a witness, testimony, and then you have witness in Brown, Drivers and Briggs definition, a witness, testimony, evidence of things. And it's interesting that the word testimony, it goes back to the word witness, and it's the same word that is used in Isaiah chapter 44. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 44. Keep your place there. We'll be coming back to Exodus chapter 25. But in Isaiah chapter 44, let's look at verse 1, and then we shall read verse 7 through 8, because again, we're looking at the word testimony, and it's referring to the witness, or witness, not the witness, but it's referring to witness. And it's the same word that is used. So reading Isaiah chapter 44, verse 1, it says, "Yet hear now, O Jacob, my servant, and Israel, whom I have chosen." Let's look at verse 7. "And who, as I will foretell and set in order for me, since I appointed the ancient people, and the things which are coming and will come, let them foretell them." So we know who is set aside or set apart in these last days to bring forth the message, to foretell the things to come, and also to teach us. And that is the witness. The witness is the one that Yahweh has given to us. Verse 8, "Do not fear nor be afraid. Have I not told you from that time and have declared, you are my witnesses? Is there a source of power except me? Truly, there is no other rock. I know not one." So in Isaiah chapter 44, verse 8, you have the word witnesses. It's word number 5707. And it's the same word that we covered in the word testimony. And it means a witness. And it's from 5749. It means a witness, testimony. And then in Brown, Driver and Briggs, it means a witness, testimony, evidence of things, witness of people, from 5749. And if you look at word number 5749, it really describes the job that pastor has, that he has been fulfilling all of these years in teaching, guiding, instructing us, you know, giving us the information that is needed to help us to overcome and to become acceptable to Yahweh, so that we can actually become a holy people whom Yahweh will be able to dwell among. So it's word number 5749, and this is from, the first definition is from Strong's Hebrew Dictionary. It means, I'm just going to read the highlighted portion. It means admonish, charge, earnestly, lift up, protest, call, take to record. It also means to testify, give warning, bear witness, call to witness, give witness, take to witness. And then in Brown, Drivers and Briggs, and as I was going through this definition, and it really describes the work that pastor does. It means to return, repeat, go about, do again. And often, when you go through the sermons and his teachings, there are certain things that are repeated, and he brings out information again and again. It means to surround, go round and round. And that reminded me of back in the days of the press room, where the books were collated, that people actually went round and round the table putting together these books and magazines and so forth at that particular time. To restore, relief, to be restored, to be a witness. To be a witness, say again and again. So you get that repetition, which is part of his work, to say again and again. To testify, be a witness, to cause to testify, take or call as witness, invoke, to protest, affirm solemnly, warn. And this is something that he does again and again, giving us that warning, in teaching us what the ways of sin would bring and why we shouldn't sin. It also means to exhort, to enjoin solemnly, admonish, which is correction, charge, to protest, and give warning. So all of this is in the word witness that talks about the two witnesses, and it gives a description of his job and the job that he has been doing for so many years that he has been preaching to us. So let's get back to Exodus chapter 25, because this Ark of the Testimony and this physical Ark of the Testimony, it actually contains the work of Yahweh. And what I'm going to be reading from, after I read Exodus chapter 25, I'm going to be reading from the sixth book of Israel, chapter 35. But just let me get quickly to Exodus chapter 25 again. So it says, "And there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are on the ark of the testimony, and above all things which I will give you in the law to the children of Israel." And of course, you know, this was presented back, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, it was brought out, and the testimony, the works of the one sent was placed in that ark back in 2006. It was the Feast of Tabernacles on the last great day. And I'm going to just read some, just a little bit quickly, some of the things. So it says, "Now, if we could," this is Pastor speaking, "for the Ark of the Covenant, we have quite a few things, different things that we need to do in there, and this will not finish it, but it will give us the testimony up to this date." Now, this was back in 2006. And at that time, the Ark was on the stage. It was the very same feast that the lampstand was first presented, which was on when the stage was on that side. So you had the Ark of the Covenant, and that, at that very feast, the lampstand was first presented, and it had a number of things that was placed into the Ark. So it talks about, on the Day of Atonement in verse 182, that is highlighted, the 40 gigabyte, two tablet notebook, and the storage information that it has. And then in verse 183, it talks about the Mark of the Beast, volume 1 and 2, the Book of Yahweh, the 10th edition. And then it goes through all the books. And by no means, this is really an extensive list of everything that was put in there. And this, what we have here, doesn't cover from, it doesn't cover the things that we were taught from 2006 up to this time. So you could see how much information that Pastor has taught since then. And the reason why I'm showing this and talking about the Ark of the Covenant is that the information that is in this Ark and what it represents, this is what we actually have to have in our hearts. You know, this is specifically what we have to have in our hearts, and this is exactly what Yahweh is searching for. Now, you know, brothers and sisters, Yahweh is not searching for the things that you're looking at on YouTube. You know, he's not searching for false doctrine that you could be loading yourself up in terms of taking. You know, just recently I saw that a news article this week that they found Noah's Ark, well, on Mount Ararat, and they look at this mountaintop and they say, well, it looks like a boat. You know, and pastors already taught us that when they came out of the Ark, they used the wood to start sacrificing. You know, there's no remnants of that boat left, of Noah's Ark. But Christianity will teach you, well, you could go out there to Mount Ararat and you could find that boat, or you could go to a place in Saudi Arabia and you could look at the top of a blackened hill, and you could think that's Mount Horeb, where Moshe took the children of Israel. And you could find tons of misinformation on the internet while neglecting the things that are taught and placed in this box. You know, and this is something that we have to guard against. We have to be faithful to the teaching, because this is what Yahweh is going to be looking for. Just to close, you can write this for your notes, Revelation chapter 22, verses 12 through 16. And I'll just like to read verse 16, because just as the last scripture. But it says, "I, Yahshua, have sent my Malach to testify to you these things in the congregations of the house of Yahweh." And of course, we know who that Malach is. And we know that word testify, it means to witness. He's going to witness to us these things in the congregations of the house of Yahweh. And that's the testimony that we have to have in our hearts. And that's why I said the sermon, the title of the sermon is The Heart of the Witness. So Yahweh bless the understanding. Last for everyone to please stand. Now I'll turn it over to the great Kohan, David Hawkins. Praise Yahweh.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. It's an honor and a privilege to address the called out ones of the house of Yahweh, those of you gathered here in the sanctuary, and all those of you who are able to listen to this broadcast because of the technology that the prophet Daniel prophesied would be in these last days when he said that knowledge would increase. Please be seated. The title of the sermon today is Return to Me, and I Will Return to You, says Yahweh of Hosts, and that's in Malachi 3, verse 7. The subtitle of this sermon, Yahweh offers eternal life only through his house, the house of Yahweh, right here. This established work, established by the two witnesses, Jacob and Yisrael Hawkins, and the overseer, the great overseer, Yisrael Abel Hawkins, has been going it by himself for the last 28 years since the death of his brother in Jacob in 1991. I'd like you to turn over in your books of Yahweh to Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 5, because this describes the life and death cycle, which we see in the plants. And first of all, Isaiah 40 verse 5 says, "Thus salvation." And when you see the word salvation in book 1, it's referring to Yahweh's salvation, who is our great high priest, Yeshua Messiah. The salvation of Yahweh will be revealed, and he has been revealed, and he's qualified and sitting in the heavens at this time. And all flesh will see it together, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken. The voice said, "Cry," and he said, "What will I cry?" Now here's this cycle I was referring to. All flesh is like the grass, and all the comeliness or the beauty of it is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers, and we see that. It sprouts up, gets very lush. The cattle graze in knee-deep grass. But in the fall, the freeze comes along, and it dies for that year. So the grass withers, and the flower fades because the Spirit of Yahweh blows upon it. Truly, the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but notice something that is eternal. The law of our Father will stand forever. Speaking of the 613 laws of peace. So if we can attach our lives to the 613 laws, which we can here at the Great House of Yahweh, which teaches the laws, we also can live forever. In Genesis 6, verse 3, and Yahweh said, "The men of this world will never subject themselves to my word, the law and the prophets, for they are indeed carnally minded, thus their days shall be 120 years. And the life extension movement in the world today, their target is to live 120 years. Now, from the first book of Yeshua, Pastor spoke, he said, through the spirit of unfeigned, genuine love of the brothers, love one another fervently with a pure heart, having been begotten, that is also the spirit that begets you, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible by the word," speaking of the law. That is the laws of Yahweh, which lives and remains forever, forever. We have the law in our hearts, like the previous speaker was speaking about. We also can live forever. For all flesh is as grass. Without the laws of Yahweh, all flesh is as grass. As the flowers of the grass withers and the flowers fall away, but the word, that is the laws of Yahweh, Pastor said here, these are eternal. They bring eternal life to anyone who follows them. Endures forever. These are the laws that were preached through the message to you. So I have a question for, really applies to everyone, but specifically also for those who have been here to the house of Yahweh and have left. Those who have left the house of Yahweh, what is your plan to obtain eternal salvation? What is your plan? What's your plan to obtain eternal salvation? In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8, though he, Yeshua, was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. Tests and trials. We know in Exodus 20:20 tells us we're going to be tested, we're going to be tried. And that all has a beneficial purpose for us, for developing our character. Verse 9, then being perfected, he, Yeshua, became the causer of, notice, eternal salvation. Get those minds in your hearts and mind. Get those words in your hearts and minds. Eternal salvation. That's what we're all striving to obtain to all those who obey him. And in 2 Timothy 2, verse 10, therefore I endure all things for the sake of the elect, that they may also obtain the salvation which is in Yeshua Messiah with eternal glory. There are those two words again. Eternal salvation. Salvation eternal. So we just yes, in Hebrews 5 verse 8, he, Yeshua, became the cause of eternal salvation. Now, the Greek word 166, eternal, it means perpetual, which means forever. Perpetual means it never comes to an end. It goes on forever and ever and ever. Eternal, forever, everlasting. And the word salvation is Greek word 4991. It means rescue. Now, that's a very positive word, to be rescued, rescued from death. In fact, Yahweh's plan rescues us from death. And safety. There's safety in this word salvation. To deliver, health, salvation, save. And it comes from the Greek word 4982, a deliverer. That is, who's our deliverer? Well, Yahweh has the overall plan for deliverance, and Yeshua provided the atonement so that we can qualify. So as part of this plan, as part of this plan in these last days, and in fact, every generation of the house of Yahweh, there was the wise and faithful servant. In Matthew 24, Yeshua spoke about this, where he said in verse 45, then who then is a faithful and wise servant? Well, in this last generation, the generation of the two witnesses, Yisrael Hawkins, and this the seventh era, is the wise servant who teaches us, and the message from him goes out to all the earth, whom his ruler has put in charge of his house, yes, this house, the house of Yahweh, to give to the others the food and supplies, the spiritual food and the physical food, food and supplies at the proper time, everything in its proper timing. Blessed is that servant, Yisrael Hawkins, whom his ruler, Yeshua, when he comes, will find him doing. And verse 47, truly I say to you, he will appoint him ruler over all his positions as the part of the first family. In Isaiah 44, verse 21, we see the words, the names of the two witnesses and Yahweh's servant Yisrael. Remember these lessons about the worship of gods, Elohim, O Yaakov Hawkins, one of the two witnesses, and Yisrael Hawkins, the other witness, for you are servants. Yes, serving Yahweh and serving his plan. I made you a servant to me, O Yisrael. You will not be forgotten by me. Now, on the other hand, you have what's described as in the wicked servant, Matthew 24, verse 48. But if that servant, and I'm going to say one called out by Yahweh, one who has come to the knowledge of the truth, understands there's a work, understands the law is a righteous pattern to follow, is wicked and says in his heart, my ruler delays his coming. And that servant begins to beat fellow servants and to eat and drink with a drunken. I mean, eat and drink with others who have left the house of Yahweh or with the world? Is that what it's speaking of here? I think it is. The ruler, Yeshua, of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him or at an hour when he is not aware of. Why? Because he's not attending Sabbath services, because he's not attending the feast, because he's not doing the things he once did. That's why he'll be unaware of his coming. And will separate him and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And this is going to be, this weeping and gnashing of teeth is going to be among those who have left the house of Yahweh, because they knew that they will realize at this time that they missed a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to live forever. So 1 Kefa 4:17 through 19, judgment begins at the house of Yahweh. It begins with us, brothers and sisters and children. Judgment begins with us. It's not, the world is not being judged at this time, those who don't know the truth. So verse 17, for the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of Yahweh, right here. And if it first begins with us, what will be the end of those who do not obey the message of Yahweh? And if the righteous are scarcely saved, notice it's not easy. It's not easy, because it says here, and if the righteous are scarcely saved, where will the wicked and sinner appear? Well, the implication is they're not going to appear. In verse 19, therefore, let those who suffer according to the will of Yahweh commit the keeping of their souls to him, Yahweh, in doing righteousness, and righteousness is practicing the law. That's the definition of righteousness, Deuteronomy 6:25. Righteousness is keeping the law and doing righteousness unto a faithful Creator, our great Heavenly Father Yahweh. So the word scarcely here is Greek word 34:33. It means with difficulty. So you can see there's some effort. There's effort involved. It's doable, but it takes a little effort. It takes a little study. It takes attending Sabbath services. Appear, so with difficulty, scarcely means with difficulty, with much work. You know, there's effort involved. We have to be active in the work. Pray that Yahweh blesses us in our ability to abundantly serve him in these last days. And the word appear, where will the, if the, the word appear here, it means to lighten, to shine, to show. So, it's saying that, I mean, that's what the word appear means, to show, to be there, to be someone who shows up. Yahweh is showing us that it is difficult to endure, but we must endure until the end, because enduring is required to obtain eternal salvation. It's required. And an eternal position in Yahweh's kingdom. Yahweh is also showing us that the wicked and the sinner will not appear. The wicked and the sinner will be no shows. They're going to be no shows in the kingdom of Yahweh unless they repent and come and return to their Father's house. So the Son of Man will judge those of the first resurrection. This is speaking of Yahshua, the Son of Man, who qualified to be our high priest and our judge. And notice, of the first resurrection. So the first resurrection is the resurrection of those who have had an opportunity in their lifetime to understand Yahweh's plan, to understand the importance of keeping his laws, and to the importance of reverencing Yahweh. So the Son of Man will judge those of the first resurrection. Matthew 25:31. When the Son of Man, Yahshua, comes in his glory, with all the holy Malachim with him, then he will sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him will be gathered all the called out peoples, and he will separate them from one from another, just as a shepherd separates his sheep from the goats. He will set the sheep, the righteous, on the right hand, but the goats, the wicked, on the left. These animals have their own particular character traits. I've never raised sheep, but I have had experience raising goats, And goats, they're wonderful animals, give a wonderful, healthy milk products, but they like to dominate each other. If anyone can take advantage of another goat, they will. They dominate one another until they establish their pecking order, and that's what they go with. So, and a goat with horns will always dominate one without horns. So the sentence of the righteous ones, Matthew 25:34. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom." These are the words we're looking for. This means, when we hear these words, it means we have obtained eternal salvation, prepared for you from the foundations of the world. And the sentence of the accursed ones, Matthew 25:41. Then he will then say to those on the left hand, "Go away from me, you accursed ones, into the fire at the end of the age, prepared for the devil and her angels." In other words, being forgotten forever. And those will go away into the punishment of the end of the age, but the righteous will go into eternal life or eternal salvation. So, and then also in Matthew 13:49, so will it be at the end of the age. The Malachim will come out and separate. So separate. So let's look at that word separate. It's Greek word 873, sever. It means to separate. And it's from 575 and 3724 to set off by boundary. But notice, to separate means to limit, to exclude. And I think the focus there is on excluding a person, that person who is referred to as the wicked one, the one who violated the laws of Yahweh, excluding them from Yahweh's kingdom. And going back to the scripture here, will separate the wicked from among the just, and will cast the wicked into the furnace of fire. There will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And this wailing and gnashing of teeth is crying, this much crying and grinding of teeth. It's regret. It's regret, knowing they had an opportunity to have a wonderful eternal life, but yet squandered it for the temporary cares of this life. So the word furnace there means a furnace. It means to set on fire. It means to consume. In Matthew 3:10, Yeshua said, he said, "The axe is already laid against the root of the trees." And trees, Yeshua is referring to trees as people here, or people as trees. "Therefore, every tree which does not bear righteous fruit is cut down and cast into the fire." So he's speaking of people when he's in his teaching his disciples here. Yes, actually, this is Yochanan the Immerser. This is Yochanan the Immerser saying these words here in Matthew 3:10. Because in verse 11, he says, "Yes, I baptize you with water for repentance, but he, Yeshua, who comes after me, is mightier than me, whose sandals I am not worthy to carry. He will neither baptize you with Holy Spirit or Spirit Holy." And remember Pastor said recently that Adam and Eve were created, with Spirit flowing through their veins. And we know that those who qualify for the kingdom will have Spirit flowing through their veins instead of blood. And so Yeshua is saying here, he will either baptize you with Spirit Holy, Holy Spirit, or with fire, which consummation, rejecting and forgetting is what he's speaking of here. If we accept the teachings of Yeshua, his great example for us, and keeping the laws and becoming perfect, his perfect character, we will be baptized with this Spirit that flowing through our veins. In Hebrews 10:37, "For yet a little while, and Yeshua, who is coming, will come and will not delay. Now the just will live by the faith. The faith is what we do here at the house of Yahweh, keeping laws, learning the prophecies, promoting the plan of Yahweh under the authority of Yahweh's last day's witness, Yisrael Hawkins, supporting this work and supporting him in doing this work. But if anyone draws back, my soul will have no pleasure in him. And we put our hands to the plow. We make a commitment to be baptized in the house of Yahweh. We should never look back from where we came from. But we are not of those who draw back to perdition. Perdition means destruction. We don't get drawn back into destruction, but of those who believe for the end result of the saving of our souls, of the soul. So in Matthew 3, speaking of Yeshua here, he said, his winnowing shovel is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the storehouse, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. So, you know, again, showing us the difference. Somebody who overcomes versus someone who rejects Yahweh. And what's being spoken of here, Yeshua's decision will be final. There's no appeal possible. You know, his decision is final. The books are being written about us, what we do here, and no appeal is possible. Unquenchable, it means not distinguished, that is perpetual. So what it means to me is that the decision of our great high priest and judge Yeshua is final. It's a final decision. Now, when we come to the house of Yahweh, we repent of our sins. We confess our sins, the men to the priest, the women to the priest's wives, the priestesses. So the vow we make when we are baptized into the house of Yahweh, this is the vow we make. It is, I vow before Yahweh's priest or priestesses that I repent of ever breaking Yahweh's laws, and that I will never willingly break any of them again. I will diligently strive to convert. And so after repenting and confessing and being baptized, we have an opportunity to repent. And that's a process. I will diligently strive to convert to keeping and upholding all of Yahweh's laws, statutes, ordinances, and judgments as Yahweh commands. Now in Hebrews chapter 12, we're exhorted here. It says, therefore, strengthen the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and follow the straight paths made for your feet, so that the lame may not be turned out of the way, but rather may be healed. Follow peace. And that's what Yahweh is. He's a peaceful heavenly Father. Follow peace with all men and holiness, another characteristic of Yahweh. He's holy, without which no one will see Yahweh. We've got to develop his perfect character, come into his image in order to see Yahweh. Diligently searching diligently, so that no one falls short of the honor of Yahweh, so that no root of bitterness grows up to cause trouble. If we're offended in any way, let it go immediately. Let it go quickly. Settle the matter quickly. Yeshua said, don't let anybody draw you into the court system. Settle the matter quickly. It's the same thing with the root of bitterness. If we're offended, get rid of it quickly. Work it out quickly. Don't hang on to it, because it grows into something that can consume us, totally consume us. For because of this, many are defiled. So that there is no fornicator nor profane person like Esau, who for one morsel of food sold his birthright. So that was, you know, that was his issue. He sold his birthright for a morsel of food. For you know that afterward, when Esau wanted to inherit the blessing, you know, he wanted to inherit the kingdom, he was rejected. He was rejected. For he found no way for repentance, though he sought it with wailing and gnashing of teeth. Though he sought it with tears sought it out. It wasn't available to him anymore. In verse 12, 16, profane. This is from Lexicon, Inveteros, Testimonii Librius, and Coyle and Baumgartner. The word profane means to cross the threshold of what is holy. It means outside the law of Yahweh. The laws of Yahweh are eternal. We attach our lives to the laws of Yahweh, we can become eternal also. It means to pollute, to violate. That's what profane means. Profane, the last two lines on the slide there, to choose to leave the house of Yahweh, to choose to forsake eternal salvation. So, where do we go to find eternal salvation? Where have we all come? In Deuteronomy 12, verse 5, it says, you are to seek the habitation of your father, the house of Yahweh, the place which Yahweh your father shall choose out of all your tribes to establish his name, and there you must go. In these last days, established by the two witnesses, Jacob and Yeshua, and here today as a light to all the world, as a place where the only place where salvation is available. There you must bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices. And notice your tithes. They're Yahweh's tithes. He entrusts that his tithe to us to see if we're faithful in returning it to him. And special gifts, you have vowed to give your freewill offerings and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. In other words, return to Yahweh what belongs, what the law says belongs to Yahweh. And returning it to him means return it, give it to the house of Yahweh, his established work. There in front of Yahweh your father, you and your family shall eat and you shall rejoice and appreciate the blessings that Yahweh is giving us and all that you have put your hand to do, because Yahweh your father has truly, truly blessed us. Since you have not yet come to the rest and inheritance, we have not yet achieved eternal salvation. None of the sons of men have yet, other than Yahshua, but we haven't, but but this time is very soon coming now. Since you have not yet come to the rest and the inheritance Yahweh your father is giving you. So Yahweh's offer of eternal salvation. Here are the terms. Yahweh's offer of eternal salvation. Yahweh's offer of eternal salvation and a position in his kingdom as a member of his first family is a limited time offer. You've heard those words coming out of marketing or sales promotions. A limited time offer. Remember that's true of eternal salvation in this era also. Yahweh's offer of eternal salvation is available only through Yahweh's exclusive authorized representative, Yisrael Hawkins, and the house of Yahweh here at Abilene. Yahweh's offer of eternal salvation expires, the expiration date, when you see the nuclear blast on the horizon. Then all the world will believe when the nuclear war begins. Yahweh's offer of eternal salvation expires when you see the nuclear blast on the horizon darken the sun, or when silver cord is cut, which is a description of a person falling asleep, living their life and falling asleep. So I'd like you to put your own names in here. This is Hebrews chapter 11, verse 5. Put your own name in here. Plant this information in your subconscious minds. Through the faith, your name here was converted in order not to see death, for she was not doomed to destruction because Yahweh had converted him or her beforehand. It's like right now, part of our conversion time. On account of his or her conversion, he or she have obtained testimony written in the book of life to have well pleased Yahweh. For without the faith, it is impossible to please Yahweh. For he, she, your name, who comes to Yahweh must believe that he, Yahweh, is, that he exists, and that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So here in Hebrews 11, again, just a shortened form here, verses 5 and 6, through the faith, your name here was converted in order to not see death. Now, see that? We're being converted so that we don't see death. For without the faith, it is impossible to please Yahweh. So how does Yahweh reward his servants? Eternal salvation. Eternal salvation. How does Yahweh deal with sinners? He rejects and forgets them. He rejects and forgets them. Pastor did a classic sermon on 12/20/21 of 1996 titled Food of the Spirit or Food of Spirit Holy. And in that, he talked a little bit about situations that he sees an individual getting weak and maybe not doing what they used to do and keeping the laws. And he said it scared him. And so he wrote here in verse 116, he says, and this is the same thing that's going on now, but it's creating a deeper and a greater fear in me because I see that it's eternal. The results are eternal. It's not just a temporary thing where you could break your leg and it heals back, but it's something that could actually kill what Yahweh has given you that could keep you alive forever. And when I see this, it scares me, Pastor said. And sometimes I do things that are not quite rational, and I say things that are not quite rational because a scare comes over me and all kinds of thoughts start going through my mind of what's going to occur to this person. So in Malachi, so returning to the house of Yahweh, in Malachi 3 verse 7, Malachi, the prophet Malachi was inspired to write, return to me, speaking of Yahweh here, return to Yahweh and I will return to you, says Yahweh of hosts. But you say, how will we return? And he says, will a man rob Yahweh, yet you have robbed me? But you say, how have we robbed you? And Yahweh answers that question. He says, in tithes and offerings. So this is a law. This is what we do. This is part of the blessings we have in returning our tithes and offerings to Yahweh, to his house. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house, and prove me, he says, now in this, says Yahweh of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven, sounds like a kingdom to me that he's describing here, for you, and pour you out a blessing, that there will not be enough room to store it. He's talking about eternal salvation here also. Second last slide here. In Isaiah 55, verse 6, seek Yahweh while he may be found. He can be found right now, in this generation, in these last days. Seek Yahweh while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his own way, and the unrighteous man his own thoughts. Let him return to Yahweh, and he will have mercy upon him. Return to our Father, and he will abundantly pardon. And the last slide for today, Jeremiah 29, verse 11 through 13. These are a wonderful promise here. And I'd like you to write these scriptures down and read it every day if you want to. But Jeremiah 29, verse 11, for I know the thoughts, the plans that I have for you, says Yahweh, thoughts of peace and not of destruction. Yahweh wants peace and blessings for us, not destruction, to give you the future, to give you the future that you hope for. To give you the future you hope for. It's what Yahweh wants for you, a beneficial future, eternal future. Then you will call upon me, and you will come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. Then you will seek me and find me, yes, when you search for me with all your heart. With all your heart. Malachi 3:7, ever since the days of your father, you have turned away from my ordinances and have not kept them. Return to me, he says, and I will return to you, says Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh bless you and keep you. Please stand. I'd like to introduce the great Kahan Benaiah Hawkins.
Shalom, everybody. The peace of Yahweh be with you. And you are be seated. Make yourself comfortable. Put on your seat belts, because we are going into a prophetic time which will be marvelous in your eyes. It's so exciting that as you will see for yourself, okay? And since I came to the house of Yahweh, you know, I didn't know nothing about prophecy or anything. But for some reason, Yahweh put my head into the book of Isaiah, which I call now, that's the base of all prophecy. The book of Isaiah explains the beginning of the house of Yahweh, of the last days until Yeshua's return. He goes into details. And amazingly, every other prophet, they agree with that. And they decorate all this gathering and everything there, the fury around us, and where the people will come, and how they come, and where they will come first. Okay? We're going to see that and examine that. But every prophet, the next time you read it, and you see something about the destruction of the worst of all times, is already in the book of Israel. But only they decorate on really going into graphic details, all right? Now, here in Isaiah, I call it the base book of all prophecies. And that, Yahweh kept me in that, and I'm glad. I begin slowly to understand some of it, all right? And I'm gonna we're going to share that together, all right? In Isaiah 2, verse 2, all right? It will come to pass, well, it has come to pass. That's fact. This is the gathering. The message is the greatest gathering ever. This world has seen and ever again. Never again it will be like that. And we're going to prove it through the testimonies of the prophecy. That's what we're going to point out to now. And in Isaiah 2, verse 2, it says, it will come to pass in the last days that the mountain, the promotion of the house of Yahweh, will be established in the chief of the nations, and it will be raised above all congregation, and all nations will eventually flow to it, a great gathering. And many people will say, let us go to the mountain of Yahweh and the house of the Father of Jacob, and he will teach us of his way, and we will walk in his path, for the law will depart from Zion and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. Now, there's a great deception will come in these last days. The way that the scriptures were translated and that they were written, all right? The word, you're going to remember that. Many will fall for that trap. The deception is going to be so great that if the very elect could be deceived. And the word is Zion and Jerusalem, all right? Many, the way it was written, you know, if the word Zion would be translated correctly, you would understand. Or the word Jerusalem, what it actually means. All right, now, if you don't believe that, Yeshua himself in Yohanan 4:21, he says, woman, believe me, and I say, man, believe me, children, believe what the prophets have spoken. Yahweh will not be worshipped in Jerusalem, not now or ever. In these last days, he has established his house in the chief of the nation. So don't be fooled when you see this word Jerusalem. Kahan Yehuda has explained it many times what Jerusalem means. Or you can read it in the books of Israel also, chapter 29. All right? And also the word Zion, all right? He says, and I say to Zion, in Isaiah 51:16, you are my people. So it's not talking about the mountain, about Jerusalem. Jerusalem was one of the most wicked cities there was, and it's still, since the day of it was created until this day, it was a provocation against the kingdom of Yahweh. And all the prophets died in Jerusalem, all right? So when you want to go there, when you're going to, all right, go there. I'm going to stay here. All right, so anyway, now. So this has come to pass. See the prophecy? That's a testimony of the prophets. The house of, we are here. We are the house. We are actually the living house of Yahweh, all right? So now, and other prophets testify the same thing about this great gathering. And eventually all people will come, and we're going to see how they will come and where from, all right? Let's turn to Jeremiah 16. See, Jeremiah, like I say, all other prophets, they agree 100% with Isaiah. It fits right in there. in Genesis 16 and verse 23 says basically the same thing. In verse 14 it says, "Therefore behold, the days come, says Yahweh, when it will be no more said, as surely as Yahweh lives, who brought the children up from Israel from the land of Egypt. But it will be said, as surely as Yahweh lives, who brought up the children of Israel to the protected place, from all the lands which he had driven them." But Yahweh did not drive the children away. They provoked themselves. They drove themselves away. When you come to the house of Yahweh, you're driving yourselves away if you don't believe what the prophets have spoken. Yeshua said to his disciples, "You fools and slow of heart, believe all that the prophets have spoken. Look in the book of Isaiah and look at the other scriptures, how they will pinpoint this great gathering. And this will be marvelous in our eyes because we will see it. We are in this time period. In the next, I would say, 2 years, you will see this coming to pass and you're going to rejoice or you're going to, I don't know, the wicked will not understand, of course. So now, anyway, so the days are here, all right? But it will be said, but it will be said, as surely as Yahweh lives, who brought up the children from Israel to the protected place from all the lands where he didn't drive them, I will bring them back into their land. All right, I will give them back. The earth belongs to Yahweh. All right, and He has chosen where He's going to bring them. All right, and here He will teach them. He will bring them into the land of Yahweh, into the great city of refuge, as we will see, as many scriptures point out to them. All right? Now, and he says, Yahweh, our strength and our fortress, our refuge, in the day of affliction, the Gentiles will come from the ends of the earth. This is not just right now from the Middle East. From the ends of the earth, in the day, and there's a great time of trouble like never before will come. All right? And he's talking about here, from the ends of the earth, and will say, "Surely our fathers have inherited nothing but damnable lies, vanities, worthless, powerless gods, of no use at all." So when you come over here, take your gosh, throw him back out the street there, and say, "Don't come back." "Do men make gods for themselves?" Yeah, he says, "but yes, they are powerless. Therefore, behold, Behold, I will make them to know this time. I will teach them my power and my might, and they will know that my name is Yahweh." All right? You see, but he will bring them. See, there's the gathering. You focus on the gathering. All right? Now, let's go to Daniel 12. There was a big time of trouble. All right? Let's go to Daniel. See, he also spoke of that gathering. Micaiah and everybody. But we're only going to touch a few bases. All right? A few bases in Daniel 12. "And at that time will Israel stand up, the great priest who stands for the children of your people." All right? Now, there's nobody here. There's no Micaiah standing up here. All right? Israel, the man called the branch, as we will see then, okay? All right, now, "And there will be a time of trouble, such as never before since there was a nation, to the same time, and that time, your people will be delivered. Everyone who will be found written in the book of life, or will be written into the book of life, because of the labor of the house of Yahweh, the children of Zion, will do the labor, and therefore their names will be written in book of life and put in the ark of the testimony here." All right. Now, "And many who sleep," now he's talking about the resurrection, which is shortly to come. This is all coming before Yeshua's return. "And many of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and contempt. And those who are wise will shine as brightness in the heavens. And those who turn many to righteousness as stars forever and ever." Now, I'm going to tell you something now. Who is wise? In Isaiah says, in Isaiah 33, yeah, it says, "Wisdom and knowledge will be the stability of your time." Now, how did you get this wisdom, and who is wise? You should rejoice because Yahweh has sent us the teacher of righteousness. The light the way the light shines upon you is through the teacher of righteousness. You don't come over here, now I'm wise, I'm in the house of Yahweh. No, you're just as stupid as you came in. But now you're learning how to become wise, how to use this knowledge of Yahweh. For the earth will be filled, or the people which will come will be filled with the glory of the knowledge of Yahweh as waters cover the sea. All right? Now, on this knowledge we get from one from the branch who establishes the house of Yahweh, and then he is teaching us. Yahweh has prepared the man from the beginning of these last days until forever. All right? There's not going to be no end in the house of Yahweh. Now, in Daniel, 12, verse 4, okay. But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book to the time of the end, for many will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. Yes, knowledge will be increased. The earth will be filled with the glory of the knowledge of Yahweh. All right, now, so Daniel remembered that Malak talked to him. And when he sees that Malak, I say, I saw you long ago. You watch and see. I like to see that show, all right? There will be things occurring which will be spoken of throughout eternity, all right? Now, the protected place, and this is a time of trouble, all right? But Yahweh has promised protection. Let's look in Psalm 27, all right? Psalm 27. See, Yahweh will not leave this place unprotected because he will quickly destroy us. All right, and look in verse 5. All right, Psalm 27, verse 5. Remember what we just read, and there will be a time of trouble such as never was before, okay? Look in Psalm 27, verse 5. In the time of trouble, the trouble, which never was before, you will hide us in your pavilion, in your house, not in Jerusalem, in your house, the secret place, you will hide us. You will set us high upon a rock, and he will lift us high above the house of Yahweh. This coming year, the house of Yahweh will be lifted up above all congregations. Number one, up. No more in slander, all right? This time Yahweh will glorify his house and his people. We are actually the living house he's preparing, not a building. This is a schoolhouse for us, all right? So that in the time of trouble, now you see that? He will protect the promise. That was prophesied in Psalm. He will protect it. I believe that. So you don't need to fear, all right, or run. There's trouble coming around us. Other prophets spoke the horrible trouble which is going to go around the house of Yahweh or the great city which is about being built, and it will be filled up from one end to the other. And we will see how they're going to be filled up. And you will believe it, hopefully. Now, okay, now look in Isaiah. One more thing in Isaiah, all right? In Isaiah 11. Isaiah is the book of all, the base of all the prophecies, all right? In Isaiah 11, look this up now. In verse 1 it says, and there will come forth a rod out of the stem of Yeshua. That's Yeshua. And the branch, get that, will grow out of his shoots. And look what occurs to him. The Spirit of Yahweh will rest upon him, the branch, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge. Remember, wisdom and knowledge will be the stability of his time, of these times. Where do you get this wisdom and knowledge? Huh? The light of righteousness has risen up on us. Yahweh has given you and all of us the teacher of righteousness. There's only one. You can search the whole world over and see if any other one. They're teaching their own self-righteousness, but not Yahweh's righteousness. All right, now, which will make him of quick understanding, and his delight will be in the reverence of Yahweh. He wrote books about it. He will judge not after the sight of his eyes, nor will he reprove after the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness will he judge the world, and we got to remember that. We're going to be in that seat very quickly, and he will judge the poor, all right? And so on. Now, in verse 10, let's go on to verse 10. In that time, there will be a root or the branch, the root of Yeshua, who will stand as an ensign, a sign, all right? a banner, a signal for the people. To it, the Gentiles will seek, and his rest will be glorious. In the side note, it says, that is the house of Yahweh, which he also calls his rest. That's where the Gentiles, remember? And you must seek the house of Yahweh. They didn't know that, but this time they will be brought over here by Yahweh, and I will gather them back to my house again. And I will teach them, because they're my people. Yahweh loves mankind, but not the wicked. And they have a different reward. And it will come to pass. And it will come to pass. Now listen to that. In that time, that Yahweh will set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which will be left, listen to that, from Assyria, from Egypt, from Patros, from Cush, from Elam, that is Iran, from Shinar, from Hamad, and from the islands of the sea. All right? That's where he's going to bring him the second time. All right? Now, you get it? The first time was when they came out from Moshe and said, it will not be remembered no more, the gathering, that big exodus from Egypt. This time, they will see how he gathers his people together to the protected place or to his house, which has become a lighthouse. He has set a house up on a light in the middle of a city, which is called the City of Israel. I show you that there's many names for the city. All right? And it's not Jerusalem. Don't get fooled with that Jerusalem. Now, all right, let's go over to Isaiah 60 quickly. One more thing in Isaiah. That's why I say Isaiah was the base of all prophetic books, and it gives you a great thing. But if you read it, you will see more to it. I cannot go into these details, but only the main point here is the gathering. Isaiah 60, all right? It says in verse 1, Isaiah 60, verse 1, it says, now we went through this, it says, arise, shine, wake up, and be aware. For your light has come. Who is that light has come? Who is the light to you? Yahweh has given you a teacher of righteousness. He has a big light to shine up on us. And the whole world will be enlightened by him, by the teacher of righteousness, all right? Now, he says, for the glory of Yahweh is risen up on you. You know, he who glorifies, looking in Jeremiah 9, I think it's verse 12 or somewhere around there, okay? And he tells you what the glory of Yahweh is. Now, but in verse 2, for behold, darkness will cover the earth, and deep darkness will cover the people. That is the spiritual darkness. And the earth will be covered too. The earth, you know, after this nuclear war, there will be the sun will be darkened, okay? It's all written also in this book of Isaiah, and others go into details concerning that matter. And he says, for behold, darkness will cover the earth, and deep darkness will cover the people, but Yahweh will rise over you, and his glory will be seen up on you. Find out what the glory of Yahweh is, all right? The Gentiles will come to your light, and the kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes around you and see they all gather together. They all gather together, okay? Where will they come from? And look in verse 9. Surely the isles, the countries will gather to me with the ships of Tarshish first. You will see that if you believe it. Will you believe then? Bring your sons from afar, all right? And they will bring their silver and gold and son to the name of Yahweh, your father, the Holy One of Israel, because he has glorified you. All right? Now, if we can see a little picture now, concerning that, where they will come from, with the ships of Tarshish first. You see that route over there, that picture? That's where it starts. See, that's in the... No, that's the wrong picture, I believe. Where it goes... It didn't show all the thing there. You have another picture of that? But that's the route. Tarshish, yeah, that's right. It's the right picture, right? Tarshish, where the point was, that's the right picture there. But it's from the Middle East, all right? That's where the trouble, the first destruction will hit. And they will gather there together, all right? Yeshua's sword is also, that's Tarshish over there. See that point? when they will come way back from India there, they're going to come through the border out there. Where did they come? Look, Texas, underneath there. Right below the city of Israel, all right? And that's where they come from. And when they come over here, that's when you rejoice. That's when Yahweh start to reign. While this is all going on, very soon we're going to usher in the millennium, all right? But we're going to see all things before that. Now, so we see that's where they will come forth. Remember what we read in Isaiah 11? From Elon, from all these countries, naming, and from the fourth part of the earth. That's where they will come first. But Yahweh is talking about a worldwide gathering there, okay? Now, and also in 14, let's go further down there, all right? And also, the sons of those who afflict you will come bowing to you, and those who despise you will bow down to the soles of your feet, and they will call you, how shall I say, the city of Yahweh, Zion, the Holy One of Israel, the city of Israel. Here it is, the city of Israel, the Holy One. See the city named Jerusalem there. And then when you look in 62, you can see, and they will call them the holy people. That's where they're going to be made holy, here in the house of Yahweh. And you will be called, sought out a city, not forsaken. Because Yahweh will protect the city, and it will grow. And you can see in Isaiah 1:26, all right? Here it speaks again about that city, all right? Isaiah 1:20, all right, let's check that out quick. Isaiah, yeah. And he says, I will restore, in verse 26, 126, I will restore your judges in the house of Yahweh, that is, or in the city of Israel, as it was first, and your counselors as it was in the beginning. Afterward, you will be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. Nothing about Jerusalem. Remember, believe me, Yahweh will not be in Jerusalem, all right? Now, okay, now let's go Yahshua's testimony. One more thing, and we got it together, all right? And look in Yohanan 4, okay? Let's go to Yohanan 4. Yahshua saw this gathering also, because he spoke in the ripening harvest, okay? And here in verse 35 says, do you not say there are still 4 moons, then the harvest comes? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes. Look up in the fields. They are already white for harvest. All right? Now, could we see that another picture here where Yahshua saw? You see this? These are the refugee camps. There's thousands of them. They have been cast out from the land where there's war. They will come. They will come surrounding the city that they will pack full the city of Israel. Okay. That's going to be the biggest refugee camp. It will be marvelous in your eyes. There's three things a man needs, food, clothing, and shelter. Well, they already have their clothing, and they have their dwellings. And I'm going to prove why they dwell in tents. I'm going to prove. That was prophesied also. You see, so these are the gathering there. You see, they will come with the ships of Tarshish first. They're going to come from the Middle East, from the fourth part of the earth first. All right? And he says then here in verse 36, then he says, look up on the fields, they're already white for harvest. You see it. They're waiting to be delivered from there. They have no place to go back. They have no place to go back, okay? Their cities and their homes, their lives are totally being devastated and destroyed. Where are they going to come? They went there to any other land. That's the wrong place. They have to come here to the city of Israel. You get it? That's where they will learn righteous way of Yahweh. That's where they will rejoice, and their trouble will be over, because they will never, their teachers will never be removed from their sight. So now then, he who reaps wages and gathers fruit for eternal life, hey, that's going to be our job. We're going to be amongst them. So both he who sows and who he reaps may rejoice together. And this is a true saying, one sows, another reaps. Now, I sent you to reap what you have not labored for. Other men have labored for, and you entered into their labors. Now, who labored for these people there? One more parable here. Who labored for them? Let's look in Matthew 13. All right? So in Matthew 14, and here he says, remember he says, look at the fields. Look in verse 38. Matthew 13, 48, there's a parable of the tares. And here it says, the field is the world. He says, look up on the field, Joshua said. They're ready for the harvest. They're waiting to be delivered here to a place of safety. Because there's trouble coming, and it's worldwide, it will not go away. Now look in verse 47. Again, listen to that parable here. Again, the kingdom of Yahweh is like a net cast into the sea, which gathered of every kind. So when they come, every kind, believers, unbelievers, some who seek righteousness, some could be even wicked. So when it was full, they hauled it ashore and sat together and gathered them, the clean into the vessel, but cast away the bad. So will it be at the end of the age. The Malachim will come and separate the wicked from the just. And all sorts will come. How did they come? Who drove them over here? And that was not his explain a parable. Yeshua spoke in parable. A parable is a simple story to illustrate a moral or spiritual lesson. Look here, it says, again, the kingdom of Yahweh is like a net cast into the sea to gather the people, not the fish, but the fishermen. All right? And who? It's the internet. Those who labor on that internet, and you spread forth, they have been prepared to come over here. You are these who labor for it, and we will enter into your labor. We will help them to separate them then. All right? And we'll take out of the kingdom of Yahweh everything that offends. Now, do you understand that parable, all right? He says, again, the parable, the kingdom of Yahweh is like a net cast into the sea. You cannot catch people when we go to Abilene. Let's go to a new, let's throw a net over them people and pull them over and see who is wicked or is righteous. No, it's the internet. The people, you can reach that instantly from one end to the earth to the other. It will come worldwide. This is a worldwide gathering, not only from the Middle East. That is only the beginning. And I believe this gathering will come, it could be as quick as this coming year, or with the first war, the first destruction, retaliation and vengeance. It will last 5 months, and it will be so horrible that man will seek death, but death will flee from them. Sounds like chemical warfare or whatever that. But the 5 months, that's going to be next. And at that time, they will. And then it says, behold, one war is passed, the two will come. But they didn't say the time, there's space between that time period, okay? So now, between these two, because after the second war will start, then the wayfaring men will cease. All right? But Yahweh will bring. He will gather them here, and it will be marvelous in our eyes. When we see the ships of Tarshish first, maybe one, maybe a whole line, I don't know. When you see the first refugee city set up, about around 1,500 miles around the house of Yahweh, which is the size of Yahweh Shema, the pattern is set by Yahshua, he got already placed. We're going to have the same pattern here, the city of Israel, the city of refuge. And greatly will be rejoicing. Now, again, a little short there, but if you read Isaiah 66, let's take a glimpse to it. All right? So now you get a great idea. All right? And remember, there's nothing too hard for Yahweh to do. One more scripture. All right? So one more scripture here, and that's going to blow your mind, all right? All right, now, it tells you, remember how they will come. And Isaiah goes in many details. And look in verse 6, Isaiah 66. Remember in verse 7, he says, where is the place of my rest? Remember what we read before in Isaiah 11? But look in verse 6. The sound of noise from the city. What city? The voice of from the sanctuary. The voice of Yahweh. Whoa. That couldn't be Jerusalem. There is no voice of Yahweh there. There's no sanctuary of Yahweh there. But the city of Israel will have a sanctuary. The house of Yahweh. The voice who renders recompense, well, they're gonna the commotion is gonna go around them. Yahweh doesn't render take vengeance on them. They're doing their own damage, all right, because they have provoked themselves to anger. Now, before she labored, the house of Yahweh, she gave birth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of male child, all right? Who has heard such a thing? Who has seen such a thing? Will the earth, listen, be made to give birth in one day? Will a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion labored, remember that labor, the internet was spread out, she gave birth to her children. She gave birth. All right? Will I bring to birth and not cause delivery, says Yahweh? Will I cause delivery and shut up the womb, says your father? Rejoice with the house of Yahweh, with the city, the refuge city, all right? So remember that, brethren. Now we have a little preview. Well, you're going to see, all right? This tent, these refugee camps will surround the city of Abba, and we're going to be amongst them. And of course, we will separate the righteous from the wicked, all right? The wicked will not understand. You have to learn, and you should know by now, all right? They will not understand. They will not argue. They will not be resistant. Yahweh will convince them or convict them of sin quickly, all right? They will change and will live. Let the wicked forget their thoughts. We will proclaim to them Yahweh's righteousness. Yahweh has no pleasure in him or her who will die, all right? But he wants to give his life forever. Mankind was not temporary. What Yahweh is doing, it is forever. Now we're looking forward to this gathering, right? We're going to rejoice. We are already prepared for the light. Yahweh has given us a teacher of righteousness. In word and deed, he has proclaimed that we have no more excuse, all right? And we're going to, should be excited by now. We're going to wait until the ships of Tarshish coming first. May Yahweh will bless your understanding, and let's wait on Yahweh and protect you.